Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
We'll with tonight's guest, founder of Being True to You, recovery coaching Deanne Adamson.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, Danny Shea. I am Mark Legere, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
You know, this is Filippo, and I realized just earlier that we have two people that were both a big part of our Life Improvement workshop a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was. Deanne was there, who's our guest, and Danny Shea was there as a participant, and she also sang as well. And it's interesting that I brought that into consciousness because I was thinking how a lot of people were asking leading up to the Life Improvement Workshop, how is this different than other self-help type of workshops? Now, I've done many, and I understand that workshops that were a generation before the ones that I've done or that I've taken were really, how do we say this, kind of shame-based. Let's just put it that way. Shame-based and focusing a lot on what we had done wrong as people and whipping us into shape. Let's just say that. And then thankfully that wasn't my experience with the self-help courses that I took. But the ones that I took, my understanding is that a lot of the people that were teaching for the ones that I took had a foundation in those shame-based, wrongdoing kind of workshops, and they were taking it to the next level, and they weren't shaming per se, but it was kind of implied. A lot of what we were doing wrong was also out there, and what we were doing bad. And so there was a sense of you could do better. Now, what we're all about, at least for the workshops that we've created so far, like the Life Improvement Workshop, and for that matter, Life Coaching Bootcamp. In Life Coaching Bootcamp, I like to say we're not throwing anything away. We're not saying anything was bad. When we put a judgment on things, I say, then we start to put more good energy after bad energy. And if we could allow what is to have been, and then we can build upon what that experience actually gave us. So I like to say, like, we're not going to throw the ground pepper away because we're making a cake. I mean, we leave it in the kitchen because we might want to make something else afterwards. So people seem to throw things away, like, oh, I'm going to throw my anger away. Well, okay, not okay. Because what was that anger for? Why did you have it? When did you use it? What were you trying to do with it? So maybe it could be redirected. Maybe we can look at it a different way. All of these things. So finding, and most importantly, especially through Life Improvement Workshop, is fun. Fun, funny, joy, laughter, and being able to experience that moment and life through child's eyes, through our happy spirit. And to us, what's experienced in that time is lasting, as opposed to when somebody is shamed into making a temporary change, because that's what ends up happening. So that's how we look at it. And it's interesting because when we talk to our guest, Deanne Adamson, we're going to find out about recovery, and she's going to talk about the past recovery and the transition into the new recovery and the revolution in that, which is what she's all about. And speaking of revolution, boy, we've got an activist, singer, songwriter, actor, Danny Shea in the house, who's going to be singing for us from America's Got Talent and the Glee Project 2 and all kinds of other things, YouTube, Sensation, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a great show. Stay with us here on the Life Changes Show right after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sharon Stone, and Alex Gray on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Or you can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
You know, Mark, I can't imagine going to any other workshop these days where they try and shame me. I think I had enough of that as a kid from my parents. Thank you very much.
I've certainly had enough of that. but I'm surprised that you haven't had pepper cake.
Seriously, there's a pepper cake?
I don't know if there is, but I'm sure somebody somewhere has used their pepper for cake.
Very funny. So we have fun during our workshops and having fun as part of getting, you know, improving our lives, improving our lives is so important to us.
Absolutely. That's why I brought out the pepper cake.
We're
improving our lives. We don't have enough fun. And that's, you know, when you had first brought the curriculum to the Life Changes team, I mean, it was something I really wanted to be involved with because you hear of so much self-help stuff and there's a lot of this new age movement, the spiritual movement, but a lot of it's a little bit too serious or asks you to go straight to deep or to stay in an aware perspective or can kind of trail off to being judgmental, but you know, that and a lot of these topics can be served up. Even the topic today, I think, you know, if we were able to do it in more of a fun way to really be able to look into some of these issues to where, you know, you're kind of coming at it with a smile, you know, maybe people would be a little bit more open to the information.
Well, it's a proven fact that children learn better through play and through fun and laughter. So maybe adults do too. Hello. Speaking of learning, well, this is a huge topic. There are things that people are trying to get at, and being true to you is the way that our guest looks at it. Integrative recovery coaching is what she does. She's paving a new era of addiction recovery through revolutionary in-home recovery systems. And what I love is what I read about this and where is it? Her mission is to help people understand and transcend the limits of addiction in ways that are that are meaningful to them. So with that, let's welcome our guest, the founder of Being True to You, Deanne Adamson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Filippo and Mark, for having me on the show. It's such a great opportunity to speak on a subject such as addiction recovery. I do see it as a phenomena that is affecting humanity as a whole and not just individuals or individual families, and a topic I'm very passionate about. So thanks for having me on the show.
See, she's passionate and she's smiling at the same time.
So. Passionate, well-spoken, and smiling.
That's very, very nice. So actually, let's talk about what is addiction, because, see, for years I've been addicted to pasta. Does that count?
Well, you know, I mean, in a more traditional viewpoint, addiction is a progressive, uncontrollable habit that continues despite negative consequences.
So that could be relationships. Obviously, we're going to talk about drugs and alcohol and all that, but it could be almost anything, right? It could be work.
Correct. I mean, addiction can, you know, affect people on many levels. I mean, generally, we're working with people under substance addiction, so drugs and alcohol, and then behavioral addictions, which can fall in many categories, like you're talking about, whether it's work or gambling or pornography or relationships or money or greed, technology, screens nowadays. There's a lot of different types of addictions. you know, Dr. Lee Jambolsky, he wrote the book called Addictive Personality. He would say that everybody has some degree of the addictive mindset or the addictive personality. So I do think that as a whole, especially in our Western culture, we are kind of driven toward the mindset that does fuel addiction. And that is that happiness comes from outside of us. And so as we go outside of us and we get these, you know, temporary fulfillments, we'll continue to do that. There are certain things that make a person susceptible to addiction, though. Addiction is that, as I said, that progressive and uncontrollable need to act out despite the negative consequences. So in other words, a person cannot stop. And when you're looking at drug addictions, you're looking at things like increased tolerance and physical dependency in some cases and withdrawal in certain cases. So literally a person's free will is almost diminished.
Wow.
And, you know, with other types of desires such as pasta, if you had noticed you gained maybe an extra 10 or 20 pounds, you would probably be able to lay off the pasta for a period of time until you felt like you've, you know, rebalanced. But with addiction, a person has great difficulty stopping on their own.
Wow.
And I will go a step further and explain my view of addiction, but please go ahead.
No, actually, that sounds great.
So that would be like more like the textbook definition of addiction. What my team and I have discovered in you know, providing alternative recovery coaching from home, even though a lot of our clients are going through rehab and outpatient and sober living in 12 steps, what we're doing is, I think, moving us more into the new era. And what we see is more of a spiritual deficiency and addiction being an exaggerated attachment to something external in this endless search for love, whereby the true self and the direct source of love have been forgotten. And I think if you don't go a step deeper than the physical and psychological aspects of addiction, it's going to be very difficult to find the solution.
You know, we were talking about at the beginning of the show how, for example, some workshops are shame-based, or they talk a lot about, or maybe not as much today, but today they do talk about things that we've done wrong, even one-on-one psychology, and not to put anything down, but when we're talking about things that we shouldn't do, doesn't that reinforce what we shouldn't do? I mean, do people not go home then, and that's kind of what remains?
Well, if you understand, I guess, what I would say, the science of consciousness, or for people that understand quantum mechanics, what you focus on, you get more of. What you think about, you bring about. And these sayings have remained for a reason. So absolutely, you know, what your mind's eye is focusing on, you will eventually manifest. And unfortunately, for a lot of people coming out of addiction, because they have spent so many thousands of hours thinking about drugs, that will continue to manifest even in the recovery phase. So they'll continue to be presented with opportunities to relapse. So it can be difficult to kind of get out of the trajectory there that has been created through the thought processes.
So we were talking before the show about people who actually have great experiences in the so-called contemporary traditional recovery systems and then go home. And without that present, they go back to their old behaviors.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. When I talk about kind of the old era of addiction recovery and the new era, we see that in the new era, we have to address more of a continuity of care. So these treatment programs, you know, and all different alternative types of treatment and programs can be extremely powerful, healing, liberating, mind-opening. But a person has to learn from within their own natural environment and from within themselves how to cultivate the change from where they are to where they would need to be to sustain a sober reality. So even if they're having a transformational experience, that doesn't mean that they'll know how to sustain that once they return to their natural environment without walking that path step by step. So a big part of the new era is skills training and self-mastery, and there's a lot of offshoots of that, whether it's cognitive enhancement or emotional intelligence or just basic life skills training or coping skills, and even into, you know, trade development and financial skills. But until a person understands how to uphold a healthy mindset and a healthy reality, they're not going to be able to do it. So in a large sense, we're setting people up to fail because we're giving them the treatment model and telling them, this is what's going to work for you. And when it doesn't work, it's actually counterproductive,
actually,
because now they have more guilt, yeah, more financial debt, more shame, more family disconnection, because that system didn't work for them, but it was never going to work for them. It's just a piece of the puzzle.
Well, and those points you bring up are so important, because the people fail to realize when they send someone into treatment that they have built an operating system around that addiction, right? The behavior set. They become very good at sustaining themselves in order to be able to acquire it. You know, how they're managing, even if they're in poverty, how they're, you know, how they're managing to maintain the habit, much less the behaviors that support that. And, you know, so the actual physical addiction is one thing, but the whole lifestyle that is around it can be so distant from what other people in a kind of a healthy lifestyle would consider basic, you know, basic everyday ways of being.
And this is a huge misconception that I think mainstream recovery industry is feeding into, is this idea that we can transform ourselves in this short period, and not understanding that addiction kind of infiltrates every aspect of a person's mind, life, relationships, environment, and every pattern they're around. Mm. So it is their operating system. This is how they function. Mm. So it's not just this physical separation of removing the substance or removing the addictive behavior. That is actually the reality and how that reality was constructed. Right. So a big piece of what we do is reconstructing reality after addiction. And what does that
mean? I like that, reconstructing reality. Let's actually, when we come back, let's reconstruct reality. Like, what does that actually mean? How does one take what you do home and work with it? Like, because we want people to not only get something from this, but also be able to go to beingtruetoyou.com, just as it sounds, beingtruetoyou.com. And I know you do free lectures to the public on these. So we'd like to know a little bit more about what you give. And then you obviously have the events and the one-on-ones and all of that that you do. So we'll be right back with our guest, Deanne Adamson, and a little bit later on, our musical guest, Danny Shea, on the Life Changes Show right here.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino, on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Lejeur, and our guest right now is Deanne Adamson of Being True to You, Integrative Recovery Coaching. And we've been talking about a subject that is extremely important. You are very eloquent on the subject, and I know that we want to get into what people actually do at home with your systems and give people also something that they can do right now to start thinking about it before potentially they contact you all. But I have to ask you, did you come to this work as something that was personal to you, whether yourself or a family member or a friend? How did you come to this work?
Yeah, great question. You know, I never grew up saying I want to be an addiction recovery coach. So it was not in my dream, but what was in my dream was to create a tipping point in consciousness to help change the world. There's a lot of factors that are at play here. I think it starts, you know, with my childhood. First of all, I had an amazing childhood, a great nurturing upbringing, and I think that really showed me what it means to be a healthy, happy individual. Mm. So I had that within me. And then through my later years, yes, addiction definitely has been a part of my personal life. I've seen it in my family. I've seen it among my social circles. And then probably the biggest thing was transcending my own desire to use substances about 5 years ago. Before, well, I had just been leaving the counseling. I was trained as a counselor, so I was already in the helping profession. I didn't feel like I was really making a difference working under the medical model for many, many reasons. So I left and started a life coaching business. And right around that time is when I, without choice, without planning, without forcing, without trying, just by following my passion, I literally transcended the desire to drink after 15 years of pretty heavy drinking. My whole life was around drinking. And then I started doing addiction recovery coaching after working with an alternative addiction treatment called Ibogaine. And as I started doing before and after care for the medicine, I started to connect the dots between my life story and what I've been through and my experience, and really seeing how we evolve naturally in our environment. And when it comes to creating permanent changes, it's happening internally and it's happening in our own way. And yeah, so I mean, you know, there's a lot of different reasons, but I can just say that. Oh, I was saying transcending substances, I feel like that happened to me on purpose. It happened right before I entered into this industry, and I saw that when people are recovering from addiction, there is this kind of stigma or this idea of how it has to be done. In other words, you know, it's a pretty miserable thing. It's very daunting. You've hurt a lot of people. Therefore, you're going to suffer. It's going to be very expensive. You have to take it very seriously. You're going to have to uproot your life, leave your, you know, what everything that you know, go.
And it's very shaming too.
It's very shaming. Go create a new life based on a model that is handed to you, and then go back and try to hold all that together. So when I look at my personal experience, I think I had that to show me through the work that I'm doing that it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be this coercion from your family system. It doesn't have to be this daunting, miserable process. It doesn't have to be this struggle where you suffer in pain through recovery. It doesn't have to be a life of limits where you're no longer happy and you can't feel that euphoria anymore. In fact, it can actually be exciting. It can be an opportunity for change. It can be an opportunity for growth. It can be a very joyful, transformative moment when you allow yourself to naturally mature out of the addiction. You know, and this kind of leads into your next question. How do people do this? How does that happen?
How do you know what my next question is? You're psychic too now.
Well, because you had a two-part question to start.
Yes. Hey, Deanne, how do people do this? Good question, huh?
Well, I speak a lot on just naturally maturing out of addictions because what I see, and research actually supports this as well, in Ann Fletcher's book called Inside Rehab, you'll see, you know, her testimonies of all the research she did, that when people finally do get sober, they're getting sober from within their own home. You know, most people are relapsing out of rehab. It's not because what they're learning in rehab is not productive for them or is not helpful for them. It's that they leave their home environment, they learn a new way of being, but then they have to go back and figure out how to create that on their own.
So, and they're in the environment that fed that addiction, mm-hmm. right? Everything in their home mm-hmm. and everything in their life reminds them of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So as far as, you know, what people can do, I think the most important thing is starting with preparation. Most people will wait until last minute in point chaos, you know, point crisis, and then jump into rehab last minute. By that point, they're desperate for help. It's easy to take advantage of individuals and families. They'll pay pretty much anything because they're at the end of their lifeline and, you know, they want to save their life, and then they jump right into rehab. My message to everyone is to think about from within you, what is it that you want to create? You know, what is it that, why do you want to change? Why is this important to you? What are your intentions around that? So preparation is extremely important. And there are many aspects to preparation, whether it is setting intentions and knowing what it is that you want to do and why you want to do it for you. I mean, in the old era, I see that, you know, people are being pushed through fear and extrinsic motivation in order to create change. And ultimately, that is going to fall short. A person always, you know, they say people have to hit rock bottom, and it's mostly just because they have to find that will within themselves. And you don't have to wait until the end. You can start thinking ahead of time. Why do I, you know, what is it that I want with my life? Why do I want change? Why is this important to me? What will be strong enough for me to really fight for my life and to fight for change? And then what you were saying about, you know, the environment, and they go back to their environment and all those triggers that are there, you have to start to prepare. You have to prepare your mind for change. You have to prepare your body for change, and you have to prepare your environment for change. You have to start to prepare your relationships and communicate the change in dynamics in those relationships before you go into treatment. If you go right into treatment and you come back, you're going to walk right back into that mess exactly where you left off. And it's pretty much inevitable that you'll go right back to where you are. But there's so much that a person can do. And, you know, when we're talking about addiction, people have a lot of time before they're usually seeking help or going into treatment. So there's quite a bit you can do mentally, emotionally, physically, socially, environmentally in preparation for change.
You know, while you were talking, it's interesting. I was getting this vision of a marathon runner training. You know, that's not something you can typically, that most people can't typically say, I'm going to run a marathon today. And yet the amount of change that happens, you know, around that preparation, the way you eat, the way you exercise, you know, all the preparation that goes up to that event, you know, it's just kind of, it made me reflect on all these other aspects of change that you know, leading up to it. That's a major event, like we were saying earlier, that is, you know, cascaded throughout all of the other lifestyle elements. And, you know, to ask somebody just to walk in and change and not have that preparation or not to be aware of all of the other things, you know, that may or may not face them mentally, emotionally, physically, the ups and downs, all of the...
I like that analogy. In other words, you can't expect someone to go away for a week and then talk a good talk. Well, they can't run the marathon after a week. Of you know, talking about it or what have you, even exercising for a week. So it's a great analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the preparation is really key. You know, and some specifics there, you know, when you're looking at your environment, clean up your environment, get rid of paraphernalia, you know, put stimulating things in your environment, such as books or musical instruments, or, you know, replenish your kitchen full of superfoods, pull out your old hobbies if you like to paint, you know, put brain training games or puzzles out on your table so that when you come home, you're in a very stimulating environment, an environment that inspires you, an environment that, you know, encourages you to use other methods to soothe, you know, the emotional difficulties that usually lead to addiction.
You know, when we come back, I have to ask the question, and that is, not everybody wants to change. And sometimes it's everybody around the person that wants them to change or to stop a certain behavior. And the person might think they're fine, and or the person might not see what effect it's having on their life. So I want to talk to the people that have somebody in their life who is addicted, and the person themselves don't know that. So if we can talk about that when we come back with our guest, Deanne Adamson. And again, a little later, we're excited to have Danny Shea in the studio, who's going to perform some live songs that have not been aired on any show yet. So stay tuned. This is an exciting Life Changes show right after this.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We are back. We are talking with our guest, Deanne Adamson. And I'm Filippo, and I'm sitting here with Mark. And Mark, we know people like this. I mean, not that we haven't been there ourselves in certain cases.
You know, we know the people, but everybody does, right? Everybody has somebody that they either know or, you know, it's close to them or in the family, the community. That's the thing that was coming up for me before we left for the commercial break. And Deanne was talking a bit about it before, but, you know, it's not a one-on-one. It's not a personal issue. Ultimately, you know, everybody is affected. And that's part of that going back into the lifestyle thing. I was kind of drilling down in my mind further into that and remembering some situations that I've been exposed to where there's been relationship shifts or changes or events that have happened, and watching what it did to the community around
these people
and what a big deal it is, not because of whatever it almost didn't even matter what the person was going through, whether it was good or not good, but it was interrupting what the other people were used to getting from that person.
It's change.
So it's change, yeah. And it's not only that personal change, but it's the changes in everybody's lives around them. Right. So that part of that preparation of really kind of conditioning the support group and everybody that's there as well as the individual and the personal space. And I'm sure Deanne can
and
talk about
it. Maybe we'll address this too if we have time, but what's societal, it's like, oh God, I need a drink, you know, or something happens like, oh, I need a cigarette. And then we joke about this stuff, or do you need a, you know, so that's part of our society too. People, something changes, I need a drink, right? So let's start with what if people around you.
Didn't they mean green juice? Or, no.
Yeah, I need water. Sparkling, the hard stuff.
So what was your question exactly?
All of that. how do we fix all of that? So let's start with there's somebody in your family or a friend that who is addicted and they don't know it, or they don't want to seek help yet. What do you do?
Well, I mean, you know, I will slightly disagree on what you were saying before the commercial, and that people don't want to change. They do know they're addicted. They do know they have a problem. They know more than anybody else around them that they have a problem. Yes, there might be some denial, and they probably have worked very hard to instill those rationalizations around their world. But on the inside, they know exactly what's going on. They know more than anybody else.
Wow.
And I don't think it's that a person doesn't want to change. It's that they don't want to lose the good feeling that they have.
Yes.
And if they really understood that there's a limit on how good you can feel in addiction, and actually through a full transformation, you can reach much bigger heights of euphoria. And I think the addict population, if you want to call it that, they really are the seekers. I think they are the spiritual seekers, and they love to bathe in that feeling of, you know, euphoria and gratitude and joy and happiness. And so if they can synthetically create it, why not? But there is a world on the other side. And I think just the way that we have set up the addiction recovery pathway, it is unattractive. It's unappealing. It's really daunting. Why would I give up my lifestyle when I have sure ways of feeling good every day for the alternative? It's a lack of awareness.
And no, let's address the culture of, like, I need a drink or I need a cigarette or let's go do, you know, this or that, because this just happened in my life, right? Or it's Friday. Let's talk about that. How do you feel about that as far as it leading to addiction?
Well, I think there are, you know, pre-causal conditions within a person's brain that lead them to become addicted. So in general, if you give 100 people, you know, heroin, maybe only 25 of them are going to become addicted.
Really?
Same with, you know, cigarettes, alcohol. Not 100% of people get addicted.
Wow.
From using substances. There are, you know, pre-causal conditions that make a person susceptible. So, you know, I guess if you're going to ask me what I think, I mean, I think for each person, just having the awareness about, why am I going to the refrigerator for ice cream again? You know, why am I stepping out for the cigarette? I don't think that the behavior in and of itself is something to feel ashamed about. I think it's more the awareness of, why am I doing this? What am I really seeking? What is really missing? Why do I need that right now? And what is that going to fulfill? And this is one way to help naturally mature out of bad habits, is just becoming so clear on what it is that you're doing. You know, I've done this with sugar, for instance. I might still have that cookie, but as I'm going to it, I'm aware, wow, I'm really stressed right now. And I'm having that cookie to kind of calm me down. And the more I see that that is really an ineffective strategy, because the more sugar I have, it's actually creating more of an emotional turmoil in my body,
right,
which can create more stress. So the awareness starts to lead me now to the green juice, you know, as you were saying. So my thoughts on it, I don't think as a culture we need to be too attached to either direction in terms of going in extremes and never having that cigarette or never having that alcohol. But I think as individuals, we have to make that choice for ourselves. What do our habits lead to ultimately, and how much control are our habits taking over our life, and what can we do to ease the attachment to those habits and just start to experiment with other strategies that will bring the same relief, the same joy?
Well, you know, this is kind of the opposite, but using the same strategy that you're talking about, I really like coffee. And I know that coffee does have an effect on a lot of people, myself included. It can wake us up. But when people have said to me, well, Filippo hasn't had his coffee yet, so he's not awake, I say, no, I'm awake. I'd like to have a cup of coffee, but I don't need a cup of coffee to be awake. I make that very clear for myself, that I don't need a substance to wake up. I can wake up without it. I just prefer having a cup of coffee.
He prefers coffee and pasta.
I've gone years without having coffee, so I know I'm not addicted to it. But I think the way we talk about, like you said, the cookie kind of thing, or having a drink and all that, the way we talk about it, it's like, oh, I can't handle this, I need a drink. No, you can handle this. Now, if you want a drink, we can go drink, but not so that you can handle this, right?
Yeah, and again, I just think it's an individual choice. I like how you restructure it in your mind, so you're very clear where you're at, because there is a lot of social pressure and social conditioning and media conditioning around these addictions, and there's a lot of stigma around certain addictions. I mean, some addictions are very acceptable and some aren't. I mean, drinking, you can be an alcoholic, no one's going to say anything to you because mm-hmm. it's so easy to just fit into the norms. But when you're using something like methamphetamines, all of a sudden, that's not acceptable.
Right.
You know, cigarettes, sugar, the worst sugar. Drug on the planet, mm-hmm. caffeine,
over
nicotine.
You know,
these things are acceptable. So sometimes addiction depends on the culture that you're in and how they view it. Hmm. Especially when we look at criminalization, you know, that plays a huge role, I think, in addiction as well. It's leading people deeper into their addiction because we're telling them that's wrong. You shouldn't mm-hmm. be doing that. The more we say that, the more that they're doing it. So it actually can create or fuel some of these hard addictions because of the social influence around.
I've never heard anybody talk about it like you have. And I really appreciate it because I don't feel comfortable with making, especially my friends, feel bad about their addictions. I wouldn't want anybody to make me feel bad about mine and whatever it is. So like you said, methamphetamine, what are we making them bad for? Mm-hmm. They already feel bad mm-hmm. as it is. Well, for a short time, evidently, they feel real good. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard. But then they feel bad. And so like making them bad is only making it worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think one of the things we have to understand when we look at addiction is we can't know what it's like to be that person and why they're going down that journey. We can't know that that's not what they're supposed to do. I mean, to me, when I look at the new era of addiction, I aim to recontextualize the whole paradigm and the philosophy in general instead of seeing addiction as a pathology, as a disease only, as a problem. I see it as a vehicle for transformation. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are very brave people, if you want to see it that way, that are walking a dark journey of their shadow side, all in maybe the opportunity to transform on the other side. So we don't know what the soul contract is. We don't know what maybe the karmic debt is. We don't know what a person's childhood was. Maybe they're doing really well for the childhood that they had. Mm-hmm. Maybe finding methamphetamines as a self-medication has brought them further in life than if they didn't find it. Mm. So there's so many factors when it comes to addiction. And when we look at it through the single eyes of the disease model or the pathology model, and we create treatment plans for it, or we look at it through the judicial model and we create a punitive plan for it, we're really robbing a person of the opportunity for transformation because there's so much more going on behind the scenes or underneath that we have no idea. That person might be exactly where they're supposed to be.
I call that the reveal. You know, when I worked on Wall Street and in that culture, and I, you know, it was always rationalized as work hard, play hard. Come weekend time, it was time to go out and drink and have fun, and everybody did it, and that became a lifestyle for a long time. And when I finally made the choice to eliminate that and move away from it, not only did that whole lifestyle issue come into play and new friends and behavior patterns, but suddenly there were emotions and things that were coming up that I didn't realize were being suppressed. And so there was a whole new pattern. It was no longer about the, even in this mode of usage, which according to social terms was not an addiction. This was the way that, you know, I think most of the well-marketed, you know, drinking world is functioning. There's an exchange for why you're even in that place looking for that happiness, like you said, searching outside mm-hmm. for that happiness. And then suddenly that exchange for what other emotions were kind of suppressed or not dealt with or now available for feeling and, mm-hmm. and awareness.
And so you see the problem when we corner somebody, that family member you're talking about, and we say what you're doing is wrong and you need to change and we need to fix you and you need to step out of your environment and come over here and you need to act like this and do this, this, and that to be a normal functioning human being. It doesn't mean family members don't set boundaries. Don't get me wrong. Of course, family members have to set boundaries. We can't just let addiction take over. But on the other hand, we have to understand that the way out of addiction is very unique for each individual. Mm. And if we try to impose a one strategy fits all, even if we're calling it, you know, a personalized plan within, it's still a personalized plan within the same paradigm. It's still a very limiting leash that we're putting people on when we tell them that they get their own, you know, they get to make their decisions in that. For me, I see that there is not one way out of addiction. I mean, the truth is people are overcoming addictions from home all the time with no help at all. I mean, you can recover from addiction without medical help. You can recover without getting into trouble, without medications, without diagnosis, without
hitting bottom.
Without hitting bottom, you know?
Yeah.
It's really going inside and saying, what is this addiction teaching me? Why am I walking this path? What is this hold on me? What is that about? What emotions do I need to look at? What would need to change? And just creating space for individuals to have that conversation in their head without the shame and the problematic dialogue, and turning it more to an opportunistic dialogue. And through that conversation, and this is what we're doing with our clients, as soon as you spark that conversation, now they become the researcher in their addiction. So they might partake in their addiction for days, weeks, or months, years. They might not be through that yet, but at least they have the opportunity to become that researcher, that conscious observer, and start to learn the lessons they need to learn. So when they do cross that line of abstinence, they've already been working for a long time, and now they know how to sustain it.
I'm so glad we had the opportunity to broach this subject. It's such a big subject, and I like the way you're talking about it. BeingTrueToYou.com is where people can get a hold of you and your team, and they can come hear free lectures from you and get to work one-on-one with all of you. BeingTrueToYou.com. Thank you so much, Deanne. This has been awesome, and thank you for what you're doing. Deanne Adamson, you look at her, she just smiles and laughs, and it's wonderful. Deanne Adamson.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll be right back with our musical guest, Danny Shea, right after this on the Life Changes Show.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Gary Zukav, and Kyle Cease on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and at Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. Wow, what a really insightful show this has been. And speaking of insight, we have a lovely young lady in the studio by the name of Danny Shea. She is a singer, songwriter, actor, and activist. She is most well known for her TV spots on America's Got Talent and on the Glee Project, too. Actually, she's probably most well known because of the great songs she writes and because of all the views she gets in the millions and millions, because people are loving not only what she's singing about, but also what she represents. And she's really putting herself out there in some really beautiful ways and helping a lot of people, whether she knows it or not. I think she knows it. Also, while we're doing this, I want to give a shout out to David Strumpf and Matt Murray of What If Conference, or What If 360, who brought Danny Shea to our Life Improvement Workshop just a few weeks ago. So thank you to them. And Danny Shea, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for what you said as well. And Deanne, right? It was just great to hear from you, and everything that you said resonates and is exciting to know that other options are being presented to people. So,
and in an interesting sort of way, when you performed at the Life Improvement Workshop at the Hollywood Improv, in a way, that's part of what you're about. It's like not shaming people, allowing people to be where they are and finding the beauty in them, right?
Absolutely. And like you both said, making light of and appreciating where someone is, not making light of in a way of
making fun of them.
Or making it less important or significant. Right. But I mean, finding the light and finding the humor and the joy in all of it. And the process of coming to know ourselves and our connection to life and everything. And music is my way of it's my thing that helps me to not turn to other things, right? It's like the thing that it's been my therapy. It's been my way of alchemizing and processing. And
for years, actually, for years. Right? You started with the guitar very young.
I started with the guitar at 16, but before that I had always been into writing and singing and doing improv and all kinds of theater and things like that. So any creative activity, really. I love to draw, create, just arts and crafts. It was always finding some kind of creative outlet.
You know, talking about not making light, I know you take something that it could devastate some people, but you took it and actually made a song that is helping a lot of people and is really poignant. And I'm talking about, you know, the question of, I even hate saying
girl or
it.
Boy?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, right? don't hate saying it. I think it's completely relevant for the times too. I mean, it's a big question. It's not one of the songs I was planning on playing today. But please do check it out on YouTube, because it addresses the topic of gender and the ideas and the constructs that we've built up around these ideas of masculinity and femininity, and how, speaking of shame, how men are shamed, boys are shamed for having feelings and emotions, and are turned away from really learning how to process and express those things. And I think it's extremely damaging to their ability to connect later on if they don't learn how to connect with themselves and understand their own feelings and emotions. And then on the flip side, for girls and women, I feel like it's damaging for that perspective on masculinity is damaging to women as well, and it's also damaging because of their relationships, but also to the flip side of women feeling shamed about their body and image, and also feeling less capable, whether it because of programming, whether it be because of being told they're not as physically capable or as smart. And I feel like, honestly, all of that is a bunch of bull. Because we're made of all of it. All of us are made of all of it. And if we can find balance in that and understand the beauty in it, and then that's what I think makes a whole person.
I love that it's coming from you. I love that you're very visible out there in the world, and that you have tons of followers that are understanding the message and feeling it, and also help propagate it thanks to you and the music. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for supporting it.
So now you have prepared two new songs.
So there's not new songs. And I wanted to address that. They're not new songs. Actually, they're older songs, but I just am feeling into just the name of the show in and of itself, and you and what I experienced at the workshop. This felt like two songs that would fit right into the show. So there's some lightness and some joy and some play and some humor. And I feel like, one is called Street Lamp and one is called A Child Song.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which is coming first?
I think I'm going to do Street Lamp first.
And it's about?
So Street Lamp, as I was saying, it's kind of funny, without knowing the topic of the show, I just picked these songs just based on feel. And
it's a beautiful thing.
As it turns out, it matches the exact topic we're looking at here, and processing our own minds and how our minds can feel like the enemy at times managing and understanding our minds can feel so daunting. So this song is based on that.
Wow. Well, this is exciting. Here we have Danny Shea singing Street Lamp on The Life Changes Show.
Okay, here we go. Sometimes I'm steady like a rock. Sometimes the truth speaks when I talk, but then again, a little more often than not, I'm pushing through the fog of my own thoughts, and then the street lamp in my head flips a switch and I come back, ready to devise a stronger plan of attack. I know these circumstances are to help me train to be a warrior for peace against my brain. Sometimes I'm open to receive. Sometimes even when my eyes are closed, I can see. But sometimes in a matter of minutes, I'm so far down that suddenly I'm looking up to see the ground, and then the street lamp in my head flips a switch and I come back, ready to devise a stronger plan of attack. I know these circumstances are to help me train to be a warrior for peace against my brain. So don't ask me how we came to be, 'cause it really doesn't matter, you see. Because life is but a dream filled with the ultimate distractions. Maneuver your way through them and you're free. Oh, if you get there first, come find me. Come find me. Sometimes I'm taken by surprise. Sometimes I can see God in my eyes. But sometimes, like a dragon's breath, the smoke reappears, and I'm blinded once again by my fears. But then the street lamp in my head flips a switch and I come back, ready to devise a stronger plan of attack. I know these circumstances are to help me train to be a warrior for peace against my brain. Crazy brain. Oh.
All right.
All right.
Awesome. Street Lamp. Danny Shea.
By the way, the crazy brain is a joke. It's a joke. Making light of my own craziness.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that and hold that thought, actually. I just want to give this out. She's known as The Real Danny Shea on Facebook. That's how people can find you on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Real Danny Shea. And on Twitter, it's just Danny Shea.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any other, should we give any other address out? Is there a website or Instagram?
If you wanted
Instagram
to find... Instagram, it's The Real Danny Shea. Twitter's just Danny Shea, yeah, like you said.
Okay.
Is it?
Very cool.
I have a website, but it's under construction.
Right, I was trying to get on it today.
Yes.
Just wouldn't let me. So I wasn't wearing my construction hat, I guess. talking about that, you know, your crazy brain, quote unquote, as you said, I have to say that I've seen you in situations like, well, obviously on YouTube and live and all that. You're very poised. It's like, it seems like nothing can rattle you. Right? Do you know you come across that way? I mean, you're just like, you come across so grounded.
Wow. Thanks. That's good to know. I mean, yeah. We all have our moments, I'm sure. And it's a matter of just finding ways to bring myself back. And thankfully, I've also done a series of different kinds of trainings and courses and things, and have invested time and put a lot of time into developing skills to be able to manage my mind, because I was, you know, sabotaging and living in states of fear that were really holding me back, you know, from being able to fully reach people and do what I want to do.
Sounds like the human condition.
Exactly. So exactly.
Here you are, reaching people through your music and sharing the process.
Hmm.
She's perfect for today's show.
Absolutely.
That song could have been like a poster song, right?
I want her to say something.
And what a compliment, both guests.
Thank you.
And we've had a number of listeners write in. So loved having both of you here tonight.
Right on.
Yeah. Well, I'm addicted to music, so I'd like to hear another song.
All right. Sounds good. So this song is a child song. Right. And this is funny because it just brings it right back to what you said at the very top of the show, which is that it's all about playfulness and fun and joy and tapping into that and people I feel that as we grow, especially in the way our society operates, is like shutting down that playfulness and that child inside and that creativity and that excitement. You know, in school it's very much like pay attention and do what you're supposed to do and stay in line, and I get why, I understand, I see why that is a system that's in place, but I feel like it's so needed, it's so necessary. Play and tapping into our inner child is like, it's medicine for our souls and for the world.
It's interesting, I saw an infographic comparing all of the demands in the prison system and using the same language for what we go through in the school system. Is really kind of eye-opening to look at that from just an, you know, instructional perspective.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. More play, please.
It's very numbing. It's very much numb and detached from your real feeling.
Yeah. So speaking of the real feeling, you came up with the idea of doing that song. Of all the songs you could have picked, you picked that song, and you had no idea what the monologue was.
No.
Nobody did. And so there you are. You tuned right into it. So we're booking ending. We're booking ending.
Book ending.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Danny.
I'll be the other bookend.
And this is the child song?
A child song.
A child song. Yeah. Danny Shea on the Life Changes Show.
All right. Here we go. Actually, I'm gonna do one more up. Okay. I hold the tree limbs like they are my mother's arms, and I'm barely squeezing them like I could never fall, because I know she'll hold me up, 'cause I know she'll hold me up. the tub. And I'm barely, and oh man, can I start the song over?
Would like it.
Okay.
Good for you.
All right. If I'm going to go recording this, it better be right, you know? There we go. Tree limbs like they are my mother's arms, and I'm barely squeezing them like I could never fall, because I know she'll hold me up, 'cause I know she'll hold. My father is the tub, and I sink into it, breathing strength into my lungs, because I know he'll hold me up, 'cause I know he'll hold me up. And if you can read the signs, and if you can read the signs, I know you will find your way home, home, home. I know you're gonna find your way back home. So real, because I know love will hold me up, 'cause I know love will hold me up, 'cause I know love will hold me up. The mother, the father, the earth, the water, the sound of my voice. I am son, I am daughter. The call to be brave is the call to move higher. So I will rise up like the flames of a fire, 'cause I know love will hold me up.
Wow. Thank you. Danny Shea, the real Danny Shea on Facebook, the real Danny Shea on Instagram, and Danny Shea on Twitter. You're amazing. Do you have a CD?
I have lots of stuff on iTunes and Spotify
and
YouTube and all that jazz. YouTube.com/Danny Shea has a lot of my older stuff. And you can find some stuff that's not on YouTube if you look at Spotify and iTunes and all that.
Okay, very good. Yeah. And the CD that, is that also for sale someplace?
Which one are you?
The one that we saw.
That you guys got?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, okay. That's all on iTunes.
It's all on iTunes. Yep. Okay, so it's all there. And just Danny Shea.
Yes.
Danny Shea. And that's D-A-N-I-S-H-A-Y.
Yes.
And before we go, Dar from Las Vegas was kind enough to send in the recipe for pepper pound cake.
Oh, there seriously is a pepper pound
so
cake?
So we can have our pepper cake and eat it too.
There you go.
Thanks, Dar.
Thank you, Dar. We had a great show, actually. This is very exciting. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. Danny. And isn't it funny that you commented on me being poised and then I messed up on my own?
Well, actually,
I love that.
But you see how poised you were when you did, and you took a moment and said, "I'm going to do that again," and you did it.
You're right.
So that's what I'm talking about, because
it was brilliant.
Yeah. Because to me, it's not just about doing things perfect all the time.
Right.
It's being able to be perfect when things don't always go right.
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 It's just flexibility.
Exactly. And that was handled perfectly. So
that was an improv moment.
That was an improv moment. My life. I love that. There we go with a bookend again.
Callbacks. Okay. So this is, we have to do this again. This is just way too much fun.
So fun.
Thank you, Danny Shea. Thank you, Deanne Adamson. And we both know that, we all know that you came from great distances to be here, and it's been such a pleasure. So with that, I'd like to thank our engineer at Studio NoHo for the great space to be doing this in and the great sound. We all sounded great, didn't we? Thanks to BBS Radio and Doug Newsom, our engineer at the radio network. And on behalf of our executive producer, I should probably say, actually, we've got Cade Currier in the house, who came to see the two of you ladies. Mm-hmm. And when he found out that the two of you were going to be here, aww, he was also at Life Improvement. So you had a studio audience because your fans are wanting to be here. Oh, we should mention Kate. Or Cat.
Cat and
thanks for being here, guys.
And on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, and our producer, Mark Legere, and myself, Filippo Voltaggio, we're here to remind you that as life changes, as ours did just tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.